Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door just like me, just like Ken.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Today, we continue on with That One Play, a series of reviews historically of individual plays in Ravens history and what they meant to individual fans. And we're going to talk through one. I hope if you get in the spirit, you'll pick up on this. You'll DM me and have a chance to do your own. But we got a downer of a play to talk about right now. And one of the biggest downer games in Ravens history. There are kind of two that stick out in my mind. The 2019 divisional loss against the Titans and the 2006 divisional loss after the bye against the Colts, both in Baltimore, both just horrific losses. But here to talk to me about that is Alan Frankel. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Really, really awesome to be here. You know, this team is a really, really big one for me. I was really young when this team, you know, unfortunately went down in that game, and pretty foundational experience for me as a Ravens fan and as a football fan in general.
Definitely one of the key experiences lifetime. And you remember the highs and the lows. You know, I mean, the highs for me, the Mile High Miracle game took over as my greatest day as a football fan after the 2000 win against the Titans in Tennessee. At both games, both are fantastic experiences, but you know, both of the kind of the ultimate 10 high, you know, in terms of this 2006 Colts game might have been the worst ever. It's right there with the 2019 game in terms of losing that game to the Titans. But where does it fit for you?
So I actually have a game higher up on that list, even with this game. And that's the Steelers' loss when we got out to, I think, a 17-7 lead, had multiple opportunities to come back that ultimately failed. One of the true great divisional round games. I think it was a divisional round game, but that game slightly beats out the Titans' loss in terms of devastation because of how close we were.
That was horrible. A lot of people also remember the 2011 AFC Championship, but 2010, you're talking about, they led 21-7 actually at the half and lost that game to Pittsburgh despite the 14-point lead, and just a miserable finish. But you're right. We remember. I think sometimes, because being a sports fan is kind of a group misery thing. Also, it's a collective misery thing. We complain, generally speaking, even when our team is good, about the minor things that are not good. You know, but I think because it's so much that we tend to remember a lot of these low points. And so this particular game had several particular low points, in my opinion, in terms of what happened. But you've picked one.
Yeah, I definitely picked this game as being the big one, and this play being the lowest moment for me at that point as a Ravens fan. In terms of what that team meant to me, I was living in Cleveland at the time. I know I'm 28 now, so it's like, what, 15 to 17 years ago, going back. So I'm a young kid, and the only games I could really watch were games that played at four, played at, you know, national TV games, and, you know, this game, obviously. So the games from that season that really meant a lot were the San Diego game, where my family's at Chagrin Falls. They want to hang out there the whole day, and I'm like, it's the one game I get to watch. It's 4:25. I got to get back to watch the Ravens Charger game. You know, we're good. Like, this was like that game, you know, the game winning play to Todd Heap in that game. So it's, that season was huge for me as a fan, because it was the first really kick-ass Ravens team that I got to see. You know, the 2001 team, I was a little bit too young. This team was good on both sides of the ball. They had McNair, who I had, you know, has a lot of history with the Ravens, kind of coming over to the dark side. Just a really great, fun team, Rex Ryan's attitude towards it. So a couple of like really specific games that stand out from that season are the New Orleans game that was on national TV, the two Steeler blowouts, which were just unbelievable to watch. Fan nirvana for Ravens fans, I think, to beat the Steelers like that, culminating in Bart Scott's, you know, huge hit. So this team was great for me because I really got to see them win every time. They were that first true kick-ass Ravens team that just sticks out as, damn, that was a team that really had a shot.
Okay, so this team was off to a great start, 4-0, culminating with that win over San Diego, 16-13 at home. Then they lost two straight. Went to Denver, lost on Monday night, came home, got beat by the Panthers in a game they kept getting back into, and then they got beat. Eventually, I think it was Steve Smith who might have caught a long touchdown pass. Then they had the bye week, and you know, you don't know where you are exactly coming off that, but they went to New Orleans for a game against Drew Brees and the Saints, and this is a team that, you know, they might have been favored in this game. I really don't know whether the Ravens or Saints were favored, but the Ravens ended up winning that one easily. The Saints just basically could not control the football, got lots of interceptions and whatnot. Ravens go on to win 9 out of 10 from that point, culminating with that win over Buffalo that won them the bye. So they weren't a sure thing to get the bye. They needed to be one of the top two teams in the AFC by beating Buffalo. They grabbed the bye away, I believe, from Indianapolis. They took it.
Yeah, so I want to go back a little bit, a few games, and let's go back to that Saints game as one of those national TV games that I got to watch. And that was the game that kind of turned me into a believer. The Saints were a tough team. We went into their environment and just manhandled them for several hours. I had a best friend who was at the game. He told me all about the unbelievable experience there in the dome. So that was the game that kind of flipped me into saying, okay, this team could really go out and do some damage.
Yeah, it certainly was a really big interception game in that one. Landry had two picks in that game. He had a big rookie season, of course. And Ronnie Prude ran back a touchdown for an interception. I remember a lot of people were pretty high about who he could be, probably including me. So I don't want to say it's all those people or whatnot, but we turned out to be wrong about who Ronnie Prude actually was. But take us now to this playoff game, because I think everybody has some really specific memories about it in terms of what happened that day. But take us through, like, leading up to this play, how this game felt to you.
So leading up to the game, this was probably the most anticipated game for me, a home playoff game with the bye, with a team that I believed in. We were all over the cover of Sports Illustrated that we were going to win. I had, you know, still a subscriber at that point to Sports Illustrated, and reading that article, I was hyped up for the game. And it was a game where it just, you know, everything felt like it went wrong in ways that were totally kind of unfortunate. It just felt like we had so many bad individual breaks in this game. And upon rewatch last night, I did rewatch the game. So I'm blending the two experiences together from when I watched it back then and now. And it stands up. There's so many plays in this game, which are just, I think it might be the unluckiest game in Ravens history, which for a fan who went to the game, Ken, were you at this game?
Oh yeah.
If you were at this game, I would say this ranks up there as one of the most unlucky games that I've seen in the way it played out.
I mean, the Ravens certainly got absolutely stuffed offensively in the game, which was bad. McNair, it was one of his worst games as a Raven. He could do nothing right. You know, one of the things that hadn't happened is the Colts had done a lot of things wrong down the stretch. They weren't very good. And they lost, I think, four straight road games coming into this, or it might have been four out of five, but they lost a bunch of road games and had not been a particularly good team, did not look like a particularly daunting opponent. And the 2006 Ravens defense, frankly, looked like they could handle anyone. But they did hold Manning fairly effectively to five field goals in this game, no touchdowns. But they also didn't get in the end zone themselves, and that really hurt.
That definitely hurt. And the things that I feel in this game, and why I call it the most unlucky game, is there's, I think, four sort of inflection points or plays that could have been high impact plays for the Ravens, maybe four or five, that just don't go our way. We have, you know, two plays where Ray Lewis tips a ball that likely goes right to a Raven defender. McAllister and Reed both had balls that were going to go right to him. Reed in particular looked like that could have been a house call. McAllister looked like he had some room too upon rewatch. We have a Clayton fumble on a 50-yard play, which we get a 10-yard play because of a penalty. But just Vinatieri has a field goal that barely gets over the upright from 52 yards. I mean, there's even another two plays. I'm not going to go into all of them where it just felt like I think we had a fumble that we should have recovered in this game where we had two guys on the football and it rolls away and they end up picking it up. It just, we just could not catch a break today.
Yeah, there were a lot of those. There's for sure. And Ed Reed actually had two interceptions in the game. So it's hard to really beat on him because Ed Reed, he made something of his opportunities, but he didn't catch every ball like receivers or like many players will get on in the secondary who drop an occasional interception. Anyway, one of the two interceptions he made, he actually leapt out of bounds on the sideline and tossed it, lateraled it back inbounds while in the air to McAllister. Looked to me like he didn't hit the ground before that ball was back.
After further review, I could tell you he was not out of bounds yesterday. I watched the play three or four times. This was one of the plays that I wasn't going to mention, to go, you know, into every single play. Another play where we could have had a return that we didn't end up getting. And that to me is what really hits me about this game and sort of takes you up to the Dallas Clark play and sets the scene very, very fittingly where we have a play, we have perfect coverage. Ivy's on him and Manning throws a ball kind of just on autopilot. He's firing this out pass because of some sort of leverage he's reading. Ivy's right there. It rolls alongside Clark's leg. And honestly, in the NFL today, does it get called a catch? I think it's actually 60-40 probably that it's a catch after review. But to see us be in that perfect position, it looked like we had the perfect team the whole year. We had it running. And for a game where we could not catch a break, for the deciding play to be another play where we just didn't catch a break felt very fitting for the way that this game ended.
So set that up a little bit. Third and five with 3:57 to go. Manning throws this little pass to Dallas Clark to the right for 14 yards. You've described the play, I think, very well. once they got that first down, they started running the ball, and they had it run down to 218 at the 25-yard line before we got them, before the Ravens got them to third down again. So they were already in a position to kick to go up 9 from that point. So the Dallas Clark play was one of several third downs on that drive because they had faced 3rd and 2. They had faced 3rd and 2 earlier. So it was one of 2 third downs on that drive where the Colts could have been stopped, and it didn't happen. Certainly a bummer. What else? Is there anything else about the nature of the play itself or the snake bitness of the team that kind of came through in that moment?
What came through is that sometimes in football, it's just not your night. It's just not your night. The Titans game felt that way. And, you know, I think maybe even some fans who watched the Bengals game where like it felt like they had a lot of things going that just went against them, whether it's calls, et cetera, that this is the way that sports is. My father's a long snake bit Cleveland Browns fan. The drive, the fumble, even when they were beating the Steelers in the playoff game, he had to turn it off. He was so stressed that the Steelers were going to come back. And I could actually relate kind of to my father and understanding, hey, there's some games where it's just not your night. And there's sometimes it's not even your team's fault, and that you shouldn't forget how good the team was just because they have a game like this.
Yeah. I think everybody has a personal memory of that game. I was supposed to meet business clients at a bar downtown, and I came out of that game and I was furious. I was spitting profanity and whatnot. I could not bring myself to inflict myself on those people. So I said, okay, I'm doing the smart thing. I'm doing the adult thing. I'm going home. And that was a better solution for me at that time than going out to the bar and joining people from work and some clients that were involved. So really one of those things. I've heard some absolutely fabulous other stories we'll save for another episode, because we've got one other very significant play from this game that will be discussed at a later time. But Frank, anything else that you'd like to add in for this one in particular?
For this one in particular, I would say that as a fan, don't try to over criticize individual players, individual coaches on one game or one play. You know, I'm a big fan of Marty Schottenheimer in terms of his ability to turn teams around, focus on what's going to build consistent excellence. You know, you touch on these things as a season ticket holder. You want to see a team that competes year in, year out, doesn't make these types of knee jerk. Okay, he did this, so he's gone. Whether it's a coach, coordinator, player, management position. So that's kind of, I'd say the big thing to take out of this game is to take one game, even if it's a huge game, a playoff game, and it's a devastating loss, really try to, you know, the next day, try to get a little bit past it. As a fan, it'll make you a better fan and make you understand the realities of the sport, I think, a little bit better.
That's good advice, I think. In terms of being an analyst, I tend to be able to get past it a little bit in terms of what I do is kind of cathartic to look back play by play and see what went right, what went wrong kind of thing. This game has a special kind of hurt to it that really didn't go away for a very long time. So in some ways, it's like I still bear the scars today from it. And that 2019 team, I mean, the opportunities do not come along often. The Ravens going into that game were the absolute favorite to win the Super Bowl, and to lose it at home like that and let it get away was really unfortunate. And the Chargers lost at home in the divisional round as well. So the Ravens would have been the time they would have hosted the AFC Championship. So another time that they lost out on that right was in 2008 I think it was 2008 or 2010, whichever the one was that where the Jets were going to the AFC Championship. And yeah, they would have played them at home too. So what a bummer. You know, other folks out there who went through that, we don't want to have every episode like this be a downer, but I think it's good to have a mix of up and down, because we certainly have those experience in sports. Frank, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
So you could find me at FrankSports21 on Twitter. I comment on a lot of Ken's statuses. Huge fan of the schedule episode. One of my favorites. I look forward to it. and you could find me also on Coach DC All-22's Discord. I'm active all the time. We have tons of great conversations there. Coach DC is fantastic. I think Ken's had him on the show at least twice. So I really enjoyed talking sports. We had a 3-hour conversation on our Discord with Coach the other night about the draft. So definitely join our Discord if you're able to. We have a lot of great Ravens talk, and the draft, best night to be on the Discord. Our draft night, fantastic.
Yeah. We like ours too, and we appreciate that. And options are good. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, in particular, if you'd like to do a That One Play, I'm getting them scheduled quickly. There are a lot of them, but there are a lot of great plays in Ravens history to talk about. And I want to hear what they meant to you. Like Frank, you know, kind of poured his heart out here over what this game, what that play meant, what the game meant. I'd like to hear from you as well. So just DM me on Twitter. They're always open with your idea for a play. And I'll tell you if it's already been taken or not. But you know, there's 26 episodes have now been scheduled, and there's still tons of plays in Ravens history to cover for certain. Frank, thanks again for coming on. I'm sorry, Alan, thanks again for coming on.
No problem, Ken, anytime.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.